I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Having people spreading conspiracy theories regarding the mask and how you should not wear the mask because it contains some small 5G antenna placed there by the Chinese, and having people believe that if you are going to get a vaccine against COVID-19, then Bill Gates in person is going to somehow insert a chip into your head that is going to read your mind. Just to be clear here, I think he would be very bored, because if you tend to believe this type of crazy ideas, I mean, your brain and your thoughts would not be very elaborate. But that aside, having people believe such nonsense proves to be catastrophic during that time, during current times, you know? I mean, when it was about Soros, it was something to laugh at. And of course, those who were targeted and found themselves smeared in the press as Soros agents and found themselves trashed and their names and their reputation being trashed and they were smeared. Of course, it was bad and it was something very dangerous. But now it is, I would say, catastrophic to have people believe such idiotic nonsense.
Hey, Parallax Views listeners, on this edition of the program. We all know that fake news has been a hot topic lately due to the dilemmas it poses. However, it's not just a uniquely American or Western European problem. That's why I turned to Maria Chernit, an academic and journalist at The Barricade, to discuss how fake news has impacted Eastern Europe, specifically Romania, where she lives and works. If you listen closely to our conversation, I think you'll find that Romania and the US face a very similar infodemic. But what's more is that some of the structural causes for the current infodemic may be similar as well. As Maria and I discuss her work on the political economy of fake news. In addition to that, we also discuss Romania's relationship with Russia, a rundown of Romanian politics, and a recent news story involving the Romanian purchase of U.S. Patriot missiles. All that and more on this edition of Parallax Views. And now on to the conversation with Maria Chernit of The Barricade. Welcome to Parallax Views. Maria Chernit of the great news website, The Barricade. How are you doing today, Maria?
Fine, thank you. Thanks for having me on your show.
So, Maria, if you could maybe let my listeners know about the website you work at, The Barricade, and a little bit about your academic background.
Okay, so a few years ago, 2016, I was contacted by a Bulgarian journalist. First, I didn't know what to believe because in Romania, Bulgaria doesn't have such a great name. I mean, people are still very self-colonized, and if somebody from the Western Europe or US contacts them, they are thrilled. But if somebody from a small country like Bulgaria is coming with a proposal or a suggestion, they are not so prone to be opened to that. So I was a little scared even, because on Facebook he contacted me on Messenger, and you know that a lot of people are on Facebook and you have to be careful. So I was a little scared at first, but then he said, look, a friend of yours recommended you. We are looking for contributors to our Romanian version of the site, the Barricade. We are specifically looking for women because we have a lot of male contributors, and it would be nice to have also a token, isn't it? This is what it's called in feminist theory. So it's nice to have somebody who would discuss about gender issues and things like that. And I said, okay. And this is how it started. And I didn't thought it at first. To me, it was not something very serious because I have my academic career, my job, and this was something to do for fun. And look at us, 4 years later, we are a journalistic collective formed by Vladimir Mitev from Bulgaria, Bojan Stanislavski. He initiated the project. He's a Bulgarian born, but he lives in Poland. And he got this idea because he has a lot of contacts with Bulgaria. His parents emigrated while he was in middle school. He's the foreign correspondent for the Bulgarian National Radio, and he still has a lot of friends and contacts in Bulgaria. And he thought, look, we are behaving like we are neighbors with France, England, or the United States. We don't know what is happening here in our backyards, here in the countries that are our neighbors. And it should be very important to have a critical perspective and a media platform that offers critical perspectives on what is going on in these countries, Poland, Bulgaria, Romania. And this is how we evolved. As I told you, we are a journalistic collective. We tend to take decision collectively and to organize by this principle of journalistic collective.
And if you could, you're maybe get into your academic background. You're involved in media and communications and journalism.
Well, I started teaching in 2002. And since then, I've been teaching in a lot of educational institutions for a lot of students. My youngest one, this was a project that some activists wanted to teach philosophy for undergraduates, but to be more precise, for children in kindergarten. So I had to teach philosophy, if you can imagine that, for, I don't know, 5 years old. And the oldest one, I think, were in MA programs at the different university that I taught. I currently teach at the National Political Science and Public Administration School, and at the Titu Maiorescu University, where I currently held an associate professor position in the Department of the Communication Science and International Relations. And I teach there discourse analysis, critical thinking, media studies, media theory, advertising design, and a lot of things related to media.
Well, I wanted to get that out of the way because we're going to be talking a little bit about media in this conversation. I was interested in speaking with you because I've followed politics in Romania off and on from here in the United States, and I find it very... What's that?
Who cares? I mean, this is a very interesting hobby that you have. Why did you?
I have a few friends actually in Romania, so they keep me up to date on what's happening politically there. And I had a few friends a few years ago who were saying that a lot of the conspiracy theories in the U.S. about George Soros and Bill Gates and all of this that the right promotes here, the right wing, that it's also in Romania. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, and it's spreading like wildfire. And, you know, when it was about Soros, that is before the pandemic, it wasn't so, how to say, the effects were not so visible and not so dangerous. But right now, having people spreading conspiracy theories regarding the mask and how you should not wear the mask because it contains some small 5G antenna placed there by the Chinese, and having people believe that if you are going to get a vaccine against COVID-19, then Bill Gates in person is going to somehow insert a chip into your head that is going to read your mind. Just to be clear here, I think he would be very bored, because if you tend to believe this type of crazy ideas, I mean, your brain and your thoughts would not be very elaborate. But that aside, having people believe such nonsense proves to be catastrophic during that time, during current times, you know? I mean, when it was about Soros, it was something to laugh at. And of course, those who were targeted and found themselves smeared in the press as Soros agents and found themselves trashed and their names and their reputation being trashed and they were smeared. Of course, it was bad and it was something very dangerous. But now it is, I would say, catastrophic to have people believe such idiotic nonsense.
So overall, how has Romania dealt with the crisis of COVID?
Well, Romania dealt in the following way: authoritarianism and business-friendly decisions. This is how I would describe what happened. In the first month of the pandemic, the government took very serious actions and we were in lockdown. I mean, and people were supported. I mean, those who lost their jobs were giving financial aid. Those who lost their businesses were given some support. The businesses that had to close were given some support. Because, and by some support, I mean something that allowed them to survive. But you have to keep in mind that in Romania, the minimum wage is around $500, and 60% of workers here in Romania work for the minimum wage. So you must not think that the government suddenly gave them huge amounts of money. So there were measures taken, everything was closed, and the numbers were going down in terms of COVID infections and people dying, and it was quite okay. But then it was my impression that the business environment pressured the government to open the schools and to have things go back to normal. Why do I say that? Because it was almost an obsession that we have to restart the economy. Now, what was very good to say in the first month, in the first weeks of the pandemics, was that people were starting to think about different solutions. As every crisis, this crisis brought up some new ideas. People were coming with new ideas how to reorganize things so that we will live in a more democratic, egalitarian, and just society, and in a society that deals with the pandemic in a way that is not good for a small minority and detrimental for the vast majority of the people. And a lot of ideas, and very good ideas, were suggested back then. I remember that a couple of economists that worked in Western part of Europe and Copenhagen Business School at Bristol University got together and came up with a set of ideas and a set of perspectives that would help us overcome the pandemic and the crisis. But that ended. And the dominant idea was that we have to restart the economy in the form that was exactly before the pandemic. I mean, we should not change anything about the way the economy works, and we should restart it and think and hope for the better. And I think that was very detrimental that the business environment controlled the narrative, and they imposed this idea that if we don't restart the economy, of course, COVID is not going to kill us, but the hunger will and the poverty will. So there was never a question about taking, for instance, because even right now there are huge buildings that were recently built in Bucharest for corporations that are empty because everybody works from home. So nobody thought that maybe the government should take those buildings and host students, since we have a huge problem because we don't have enough space for our students to go to school and keep the physical distancing in the classroom. So they have to come up with all sorts of ideas. We have 15 students in a classroom go to school for 2 weeks, and then the other half, 15 students come and take their place. And while the 15 are at school, the other ones are online and home. And you can imagine a teacher with a phone, with a, how do you call that? Headset or something like that.
Headphones.
Yes, with one headphone in his or her ear, listening to the ones online and looking at the same time with and listening with the other ear to the ones in the classroom is just crazy, you know. Nobody can function like that for months without going insane. And nobody thought, during the first period of the pandemics, there were a lot of ideas like that circling in the mainstream media, in the media in general. But then the business environment controlled the narrative, and we ended up with the idea that we have to close, we have to open the economy and get it started again.
And there's been spikes in the number of cases, right?
Yes, and of course, disaster hits us because it was so predictable. I mean, if you don't change anything and you restart and you, things just the way they were before, it is only logical that you will end up in the same situation or even worse. I mean, if you have the same conditions that created the crisis in the first place and you don't change anything. I mean, they took some measures. They are trying to cope with the crisis by asking people to wear masks. And a lot of people can afford to buy, because you would have to buy if you work and you are away from home for 10 hours, you would have to buy like 5 because doctors say that you should wear one only for 2 hours, and given the fact that you have to go to work every day, it comes for a lot of people earning $500 a month. It's not very doable and feasible.
Right.
And they are saying we should keep the social distancing, but there are a lot of because besides the fact that they are not offering not even teachers free masks, those who are in contact with a lot of students every day, we have these conspiracy theorists that are spreading these nonsensical ideas that if you get a mask, then you will get a 5G antenna, that you will be controlled, and things that I don't know. I say that these conspiracy theories are a symptom of a much bigger problem that we have in Romania. And that is, I sent you a presentation about, because we are all talking about fake news. Fake news became a brand. Fake news became something so glamorous and interesting to talk about. And we have conferences and we debate this. But I think nobody looks at the structural problems and to the political economy of fake news. I mean, what generates and what makes people believe these crazy theories? Because it is so easy to say they are stupid. Okay, why? Were they born stupid? Or were they not allowed to have an education that would probably make them smarter? I mean, what is the source of the problem here? And when you look at the source of the problem, you see some pretty interesting facts. I mean, I gave you some statistics in my presentation, and I think they were quite interesting. We have huge inequality. 10% of the households own 62% of the wealth in Romania, and that's gotten worse because the numbers I have were collected a few, the data was collected a few days, a few years ago.
Minimum wage is what, 460 euros?
Yes,
and 60% like of the workers?
Mm-hmm. Yes, $500 approximately, and 60% of the workers work for the minimum wage. So, and the prices are not very different from the ones in the US or the Western Europe. Just imagine how you would live with $500 a month. So we also have huge poverty and third world poverty, not just you know, we talk about poverty because you cannot afford, I don't know, to go to Miami. I mean, real poverty. People are not having enough food, that type of poverty. And it is 32% of the Romanians live in that, are in this, that situation. And 32.5, I think, of the Romanians' children are in that situation, extreme poverty, where they can afford basically basic needs. Okay. And in terms of education, the most depressing statistic that I find very troubling, and this is where we should start our discussions about fake news, is that only 38% of the students that were enrolled in the first grade 12 years ago managed to pass their final exam. So the Romanian state is only able to offer 12 years of study and final exams for 38% of its students. We have early leaving of schools. We have in the rural area, 20% of the students leave school early. So that's a huge number. And I don't think things are going to get better because nobody's addressing these questions. Nobody's discussing what makes people so prone to believe such insane theories about the Chinese putting antennas, 5G antennas into your mask and trying to control your mind. I mean, this is outrageous. So just a few days ago, I was invited to a conference on fake news disinformation. It was actually a course that was on security and defense and how do we protect ourselves from nation states like China, Russia, and how do we fight. There was no question of the evangelicals in the US spreading conspiracy theories. It was only those two powers, emerging powers, that were the source of conspiracy theories. But that aside, nobody discussed about these social and structural elements that make people believe such theories. And I found it to be very troubling because if you don't address these causes, you are going nowhere. And there's also another problem. focusing in conspiracy theories only on nation states and hostile nation states, as the security specialists call them, will create some sort of blind spot and will make you unable to see other sources of and other agents that spread conspiracy theories, like the Orthodox priests. I gave an example of an Orthodox priest, Father Calafat. He has Calistrat. He has a lot of followers. A lot of followers on Facebook, a lot of people read what he says and are engaged in the his social media messages and so on and so forth. And
I think on the PowerPoint, you write that he has, 700,000 followers.
700,000 followers. So he's an influencer, okay? He said that he publicly expressed doubts about wearing the mask. He publicly expressed doubts about the existence of COVID. Like, COVID is like God, you believe in it or you don't believe in it. So this is such a weird approach. And this shows you that we don't have a solid scientific education in middle school. How could you treat a virus like some sort of entity that you don't believe in? I mean, but this is how things are. I mean, people believe that this was some sort of something that was invented by the authorities to make us obedient and to make us wear the masks where the Chinese inserted the 5G antennas. So as laughable as it may seem, there
a lot of people here believe it, though, too. It's not just in Romania. I hate to say that people here have some weird theories, but go on.
Okay, so this Father Calistrat said that if you rinse your mouth with and your throat with some solution of water and salt, and if you drink small quantities of alcohol, like Țuică, this is a famous alcoholic drink here in Romania, then you'll be fine. And had it not been tragic, it would have been very funny, because he tested positive for COVID-19 just a few days after he uttered this nonsense on TV. And I think here the problem is that Romania ranks first in all European countries in terms of religious people. We are a religious country. 55% of our of Romanians think of themselves as being religious. So we rank first, and we also pay the Orthodox clergy here in Romania.
I was going to say the Orthodox Church gets paid by the state there, right?
Yes, paid by the state, exactly. So maybe there's no wonder that we have so many true believers, since we pay the Orthodox Church and the Orthodox clergy gets a salary just like any other state employee. So basically, you have to think that the government closed down almost 1,500 schools back in 2011. They closed down a lot of hospitals. So basically, the priest is the only representative that the Romanian state has in some communities. Let aside the fact that this individual has a lot of followers on Facebook, the situation is that the Romanian state has as representatives the priests in a lot of communities where the schools have been closed, there is no hospital. So this is the representative who holds a high symbolic power. And Just to give you an impression of how influential the Orthodox Church in Romania is, the lockdown happened to be at a time where Orthodox Christians celebrated Easter. And since this is the crucial and the most important holiday for Christian Orthodox, it was a huge problem because they were in lockdown. And of course, a lot of them and a lot of priests and a lot of believers said that, look, we are going to go because God will protect us. You know, these ideas that somehow God will protect them from COVID-19, and they had to go to get their Holy Communion. What do I mean by that? In Orthodox tradition, on Easter, you go to the church and you receive some bread and wine as a symbol of the Holy Communion Jesus gave to his followers just before being crucified. So, it was actually, I kid you not, it was actually on the table of the Romanian government that the police should take that Holy Communion and give it to Romanians that were not allowed to go to the church because of the lockdown, because of the pandemic. So having the police obey to an Orthodox tradition, I think that is something very special. You have to give them that. And of course, I am in some Facebook groups with policemen that are in unions. Since I'm a leftist, I'm interested to see how they are thinking. And the comments were exquisite. You can imagine the idea that the police is going to take the Holy Communion and give it to the people who are not supposed to go to the church on Easter Day is just something extraordinary. And of course, the idea was not accepted. And the president said, look, are you crazy? let's stop this nonsense. Well, he didn't say it like that, but he ended the conversation on that topic. But the Ministry of Interior announced that they were on the point of implementing this idea. So I say, look, instead, so this is the situation we have right now, a very religious country with a lot of priests that are paid by the state. Of course, I do not condone, I do not agree, but let's try not to bring the police closer to the ideals and to the ideas of the Orthodox Church, but let's try to bring the priests closer to the medical and to the scientific information about COVID, because you have a lot of rural areas where they are your own representative as the Romanian state, okay? So let's get them on board and let's try to work together to overcome this. Let's explain that offering medical information and medical advice when you are a priest and not a doctor could actually kill people. So nobody's listening. They are fighting with Russia.
I wanted to ask real quick, do you think it's possible to get people within the Orthodox clergy on your side with regards to that issue of COVID?
Well, of course there is, because among them there are a lot of people that are informed, and I think that some sort of memorandum would be signed between the politicians and clergy, then we could reach some sort of agreement, since the one giving the money is not the Orthodox Church, but the Romanian government, okay? So I guess they have some leverage here to negotiate something, since they have this power.
So something else I wanted to get into, the most interesting point of your PowerPoint for me was in talking about equipping citizens with critical thinking tools and some of the hidden assumptions that we have about critical thinking. Maybe you could elaborate on that.
Okay, so I have a PhD in logic. In my PhD, I explored the ontological assumptions of first order logic. I was very interested in that. I also teach critical thinking, and I taught it for a number of years. I like it. But let's not get carried away with the magical powers of logic. I think here, you know, Star Trek with the Vulcanians and the idea that if you have logic, then you are a rational being. This is not a very good way to go about it. Why? Because, look, I'll give you the following example. All Romanian authorities lie. Raed Arafat, he's a state, he works and he's the head of the crisis management committee here in Romania. So Raed Arafat is from the, it's representing Romanian authorities, then Raed Arafat lies. This is a perfectly valid syllogism. Okay, this is a valid one because the premises support the conclusion. There is no way for the premises to be false and the conclusion true. I mean, if you accept the premises, then you have to accept the conclusion. The problem here is that you may have a student that masters this formal logic tools, and he has these skills of deriving valid arguments, and he knows a lot of deductive reasoning and inductive reasoning, and he knows about the middle term and the premises and the logical subject and the logical predicate and so on and so forth. But the problem here is that you need more, okay? The idea that you could somehow look at the conspiracy theories and find a quick fix in introducing critical thinking in middle school or in high school or more courses of critical thinking is just stupid, because you have a problem with accepting the premises. And when you evaluate the premise, you have to be able to distinguish false from true information. And for that, you need more than logic. It is such an irony that we are investing a tool of rationality with magical powers, you know? It's such ironic that we ended up in the position when let's teach students critical thinking. It's far from being enough. And let me tell you one more thing. I think it was last year that I was invited at the Romanian Parliament for a consultation exactly on that topic of introducing critical thinking for students in middle school. Okay, we have to start early because the Russian threat is here and we have to teach them to fight the disinformation and fake news, as students in middle school care very much about Russia and Putin, as you can imagine. But this was the idea that we have to be prepared, okay? So we have to prepare them early. And the problem is that, look, not even, let aside the fact that critical thinking is not enough, but who would have thought before the pandemics that good old biology is going to be so important? That good old physics is going to be so important, you know, and is going to be more important than knowing what a syllogism is. And having a solid education in science, arts, humanities, social sciences is vital. There is no quick fix. There is, as much as I would like critical thinking and logic and all the paradoxes and the ideas, and as much as I like that, I like the truth more. And the truth is that you need more than formal training in reasoning, you know? And they are trying right now in Romania to sell the idea that we have to pay only one teacher to teach biology, chemistry, physics, And they are branding it that it's going to be great for the students because they are not going to be burdened with all that theoretical information. Come on, we have to learn a lot of stuff. But in order to do that, we have to abandon some basic assumptions about education that were dominant in the past three decades of neoliberalism in Romania. That education is useful only if it allows you to get a job. This is the first one, the most important one, and everybody is evaluated. I even have at my university, and everybody has that in Romania, when you try to initiate a new program, say you are a communication department and you also want to teach, I don't know, to have a program in international relations, you have this type of evaluation methods, and one of them is how many students were able to get jobs once they graduated your program. And I say, look, we had the crisis in construction because of the bubble and the 2008 crisis. It doesn't mean that the teachers who are teaching, I don't know, how to build a house, or the architects that were teaching the students how to design a house were no longer doing a good job. The market, the job market, is so volatile that it is almost insane to link so closely the quality of the education and the purpose of the education to the job market. Okay? So the first assumption that we have to abandon is that education is valuable only if it allows you to get a job. The second assumption that we must abandon is that critical thinking is enough to fight conspiracy theories. It is far from being enough. You need a solid scientific education. You need to have a solid education in social sciences and humanities in order to fight that. And I would say the only objectives that the schools could have right now is develop intellectual abilities and offer you this type of solid education. You don't know when this type of education will prove to be very useful, and not in terms of getting a job, but in terms of fighting conspiracy theories.
Because in terms of being a good citizen.
And in terms of being a good citizen, of course, there are a lot of definition to what useful education is. If you only look at it as the ability of the education to offer you a job, then you must prepare yourself for disaster. This is my opinion.
So I just had a few more questions here. Since you mentioned Russia, it sounds like you're exasperated by the discussions in Romania about Russia. What is the relationship there between Russia and Romania?
Well, the relation between Russia and Romania is very complicated because they basically came here after 1945, and a lot of Romanians blame them for bringing communism. And it's a complicated relation because they came here fighting the Germans, but the soldiers were awful and they raped a lot of women. And a lot of our grandmothers still have traumatic memories about that period. So it's very complicated, a very complicated history with Russia. And there's a lot of grudge because it's not very far from Romania. So we had some encounters, and they were not pleasant encounters. But what strikes me now is that in Romania, we have public intellectuals that are cultivating a climate of fear and ignorance about Russia. Let me explain. They are cultivating and using these negative emotions that we have to amplify them and to say, look, Russia is bad, they are bad people, all Russians are bad, everything that comes from Russia is bad. And they are feeding on the pre-existent hatred towards that country, first of all. Second of all, ignorance. What strikes me is that most of those people who are discussing as experts, and they are invited to important televisions to discuss Russia, don't speak Russian. They are not able to read in Russian. They are not familiar with what happens there. They are familiar with what happens there only through Western media. So, look, I'm not an expert on Russia. I would never, ever dare to go and discuss about Russia because I don't speak Russian. I don't read the Russian press. I don't know a lot of people there. I interviewed actually two feminists, and I think that makes me more of an expert than most of the people who are invited in mainstream media to discuss about Russia. Can you believe that? They are not, the first level, then the first requirement is not met by these people. And they are saying, and they are basically repeating what the Western media tells them, because they have no way of evaluating that information since they are not able to read in Russian, okay? And another aspect, I would love to see an honest criticism of Putin. Because, look, there's clearly something wrong with the guy, okay? He came to power when I was in middle school. And it looks like I'm going to retire from the university and he's going to still be the president of the Russian Federation. Okay, so there's obviously something wrong. But don't give me that idea that he's bad. Okay, he's bad. Why? Can you explain why? He changed some laws. What laws? I want to know. What lacks in Romania, actually, is honest, profound, and serious criticism. What we have instead is propaganda and fear-mongering. And this is... And you know, that's a famous quote from a Russian writer. When there is a lot of talk about patriotism, then and nationalism, then somebody stole a lot of money. Let me explain how this applies to Romania. When we are talking about the Russian threat, I immediately know that we are going to buy some military equipment, you know, so they are linked. The Russians are bad, we have to fear Russia, there is a Russian threat, come up with the money, okay, give me the money to protect you. And I found it to be almost like some sort of blackmail, you know? If you want us to protect you from the boogeyman here, just give us the money. And I'm not an expert, okay? I don't know if that's true, but I found it to be a little weird, to say the least, that we have this fear-mongering and then we have this very interesting investment in military equipment. And I just gave you an article, haven't I?
I wanted to talk about that. Raytheon, right?
Raytheon, very interesting. Just a few days ago, a news surfaced about a very controversial military acquisition that involved Raytheon. Well, we were supposed to buy some military equipment for 137 million euros. And the first runner-up in the competition, because there was a public bidding, because the law of public acquisition forces those who make these acquisitions to have a bidding, to have competing companies come up with their offers. So it was a European firm. But then, interestingly enough, they gave up the European company and they directly bought the military equipment from Raytheon, but not for 137 million euros, but for 200 million euros. So more expensive with they were not supposed to do anything while the European company was supposed to invest something in Romanian companies and so on and so forth. And so we had a worse contract for a much larger sum of money and no public bidding. And Raytheon was just chosen. What strikes me is that the news surfaced in the mainstream media, but nobody seemed eager to talk about it. And I wonder why, because buying military equipment in times of the pandemic, when you have 32% of the Romanian children starving, seems very bizarre, to say the least.
And this is millions of euros, millions in US dollars, right?
Yes, millions of euros, 200 million euros, not billions, millions of euros. But for a small country like Romania, trust me, it's a huge amount of money. And you don't give teachers masks, and then you buy military equipment for what? Because if the pandemic comes, the Russians are going to be affected too. Who is going to operate that equipment? I mean, to me, it sounds crazy. Maybe I'm saying, I'm not an expert, but it sounds so crazy. I mean, we are so poor, and the economic crisis is going to hit us so hard. What are they thinking? I don't know. And another thing is that they decided to offer financial support that was not in an article I sent, but also some tens of millions of euros. Guess what? For the stores at Romanian malls. That is for Starbucks, Zara, because they are losing their clients, and of course, You should be sympathetic with their cause and just offer them some million euros. For what? I don't know. And why did they do that? And you see, this is another structural cause. When you see your government doing this type of things, even though our intellectuals are coward enough not to talk about it, you sense deep down that you are worthless, that you mean nothing. And of course, this is the background, the emotional and intellectual and moral background that makes you believe conspiracy theories, okay? Because you feel worthless, you feel left aside, you feel that you're not important, others are.
Well, you feel as if your concerns and how you feel about things aren't being addressed.
Of course. And this is the perfect environment for conspiracy theories to spread, in my opinion.
Really quickly here, I guess the first thing I wanted to ask you before we wrap up, I had two things I wanted to mention. The first thing is, where is the money for this kind of conspiracy pushing, I mean, propaganda coming from? I guess that you would have to speculate on that.
To me, there are two major sources. Of course, our security specialists only mentioned the conservatives in Russia. That may be, but there are also evangelicals in the United States. An article, a very interesting article, was written a few months ago when the Romanian government voted a law that all discussion about gender should be banned from Romanian educational institution. Good thing the president Iohannis sent it back to the parliament, so it's not applied. It's sent it back for discussion. So she wrote, the Liliana Popescu, university professor, wrote an article about a praying group in the Romanian parliament that has ties with the Republican Party in the US. And of course, I think they are getting their support, moral, intellectual, financial, from there. And we have 10% of the population who's neo-Protestant, and a lot of these crazy conspiracy theories come to them. And what is even worse is that they are very, those communities being minorities are very, how do you say that? There's a lot of cohesion in those communities, and they obey and they listen to those conspiracy theories. And I know that because I have some friends, and they keep sending me this conspiracy theorists that are having podcasts, and they are discussing about how COVID-19 doesn't exist, how Fauci is trying to get all the world vaccinated and inserted with some chips, and so on and so forth. So I think these are the two major sources here.
So that brings me to the last thing I wanted to ask about. You know, I know in some of your writings, you've written about how the left is sort of, you know, attacked as being communists, or even social democrats will be attacked as being post-communist. What is the role of the left in Romania?
Well, let me explain. We have the social democrats. There are actually right-wingers. On cultural terms, they supported the referendum for the family. We had that in 2018, a referendum defining the family as the union between a man and a woman, not a union between citizens. They didn't want to have that in the constitution as the family is the union between citizens, because they thought it would open up the door for gay marriage. Okay. So the Social Democrats fully supported that referendum, saying they are for the traditional family and values and so on and so forth. In terms of economy, it is true, they gave some money and they were a milder version of the neoliberals. But they had Orlando Teodorovic as the Ministry of Finance that said that we should abolish the minimum wage because the state should not intervene in the relation between the employer and the employee because they are free to decide. So could you imagine a social democrat suggesting that we should abolish the minimum wage? And this is what he did. So just to give you an impression how social democrats look like in Romania. And it's a, of course, they have some people who are more open-minded, but their voices are not very loud and not being heard into the Social Democratic Party. And they actually raised some wages. They did, they took some measures that were more social, to say. The other ones are just impossible to deal with. They are the worst kind of right wingers that you could imagine.
So now, are there elements of the, go on, I'm sorry.
Okay, so we have now the Party of Democracy and Solidarity, a very small party, very, very small. They were not able to raise the signatures that would have allowed them to participate in elections and to run for different positions in the administrative and political apparatus. But they are, how to say, too small to be relevant at this time. And they are plagued with sectarianism, with the discussions about ideological purity, about ideological decisions. And it's mostly an intellectual adventure that it is a political party. I am glad they exist because back in 2012, nobody would have thought that something like that would happen. And the Romanian left is starting to move because we had, first, we had the platform, Critica Talk, that was gathered a lot of intellectuals. And it was important because I thought I was the only one in the country. And when I saw that other ones are writing, I started writing there, and it built some sort of community. It was important because it helped build this community of leftists in Romania. Then we started to have NGOs. That were pretty active in terms of human rights, Roma rights, because 76% of the Roma population here in Romania lives in poverty, so we have racialized poverty. Feminist organizations, and finally a political party. But to me, this political party is not very different from the activist movement, and probably this is why it is plagued by so many intellectual debates and very little militant work.
So in regards to the Social Democrats, I guess what I was referencing, are there elements of Romanian politics that are even further right than the Social Democrats that don't think the Social Democrats go far enough?
Oh, of course, because the Social Democrats are labeled by the liberals as communists. So if you could only imagine that if somebody that suggests we should abolish the minimum wage is called a communist, you should only imagine how the other ones look like. We have two major political right-wing forces here. The ones are the National Liberal Party. And if you could have some sort of museum of ideologies, these individuals would be trapped in 1980s. I mean, their political platform, because I was masochist enough to read it, dates back from the 1980s. I'm telling you, nothing changed. Free enterprise is good. The individual is the best. We should privatize everything. The business environment is all that matters. Their current Ministry of Finance, Florin Câțu, right now, he's a liberal, and he said that we should stop this nonsense about the education and public health being priorities because the business environment is a priority. So they are classical neoliberals stuck in the past. They are like some ghosts that just came. For them, 40 years of disaster in terms of neoliberalism meant nothing. They are still very enthusiastic about it. It's like nothing ever happened in those past four decades. And then we have an interesting new force, Union Save Romania. Now, Union Save Romania, that merged with the PLUS, very small party of a former PM in Romania, Dacian Cioloș, they are some sort of corporation party. They talk in terms of, it's like Romania would be a corporation and they would be the board of directors or something like that. Of course, they think in terms of privatizing everything, privatization, business environment, but they talk this type of corporate language and they have this corporate ethos, and it is like, you know, we are externalizing the government business and services to this firm that is Union Save Romania. And they are thinking about Romania as a corporation that has to be efficient. And they scare me the most because there are a lot of young people who are very interested in them because they have this very fancy corporate language and they talk a lot about how pure they are because they never entered and they never worked for the state. They came from the business environment and they are self-made men and women and they are successful in their careers, unlike the social democrats and the liberals who are just nobodies who were not able to do anything in their careers. So they ended up in politics. And now the corporations and those hired in corporation, Romanian corporations are going to come because they are pure and not corrupt and are going to save us. Union save Romania.
So I guess I'm just surprised because it sounds like there's an issue of poverty in elements of Romanian society. Do these far right elements or right wing elements, do they just ignore that there's issues like poverty that haven't been alleviated by neoliberalism?
No, but they are not fighting with poverty, but with poor people who are to be blamed that they are poor. It is their fault because they are irresponsible and they are drunk and they are lazy and it is their fault. And they, as the political force, should fight for the young and bright and hardworking Romanians, not for those lazy individuals that are just some sort of parasites. And they are talking in this type of language. I mean, I'm not... I wanted to tell you that we have socially assisted people. Socially assisted people became a slur in Romania because it means somebody who is a parasite, basically, who lives on the back of the good, hardworking Romanians that are supporting them.
Is that term used? Like the term parasite, that's very scary to hear that that's sort of common parlance there.
Well, there are some politicians that use that, but basically they use old, lazy, stupid, drunk. They are referring with those terms to the poor people. And it is basically their fault that they are poor. So they think, and they have this idea of trickle-down
economics. Reagan sort of, yeah.
Words that if we invest in the business environment, then these people are going to lift out of poverty because the social democrats, and this is partially true because the social democrats consolidated their political advantages by having mayors that were subordinate to them that kept people in a state of some sort of dependence because they said, okay, if you vote for the social democrats, I'm going to give you the financial support from the state. So basically the mayors blackmailed the local communities. And it was a lot of corruption. And they say, look, if we have not the corrupt businessmen of the liberals or of the social democrats, but the good businessmen for the Union Save Romania, then those people will be saved from their poverty.
And in conclusion here, I guess the other faction I would like to bring up, are there issues with the, I don't know, the ultra-nationalist far right in Romania as well? I know there's a few organizations that sort of believe in ultra-nationalism.
Well, we have ultra-nationalism, but they are not so powerful as to run in elections. They are, how should I call them? We have the Legion here in Romania in the period of the in-between wars. And we had, it was called the Iron Guard.
Yeah, and Cornelia Codrinu and all that. Yeah.
Yes, and they were quite influential. And these would be the, how do you call it? Those who think of the Iron Guard as their model and their role models would be those who ran that organization. So they are not very vocal in terms of political power. But we have such extremists in power already, that we don't need that, because we have people right now that say we should abolish gender studies programs from the universities, and all gender talks should be banned from all educational institutions in Romania. That was a law that was voted. It only needed the support of President Iohannis, and right now, I would not have been able to discuss gender anymore. So, just to imagine how things were. And I think I'm still scared, because he sent it back to the parliament, but the Social Democrats forged an alliance with the National Liberals and voted for that law.
So it sounds like there's a lot going on in Romania. I want to give you a chance to let my listeners know how they can keep up with your work. But do you see any hope of change in Romania in a positive direction in the next few years or not?
Well, I always hope for the best, prepare for the worst in terms of changing the political landscape, no. I think the only hope that we may have would come from, I don't know, European Union and some forces. Maybe the progressives will learn how to speak the language of the 60% of the workers that work for the minimum wage and abandon these ideas about ideological purity. These are the only two options that we currently have. So if the listeners want to keep up with my work, I have a weekly podcast with Bojan Stanislavski, where we try to discuss what happened in Poland and in Romania. It is hosted on our page, The Barricades, and this is where they can keep up with my work and my ideas about what's going on in Romania.
Thank you again, Maria Cernot, for coming on Parallax Views.
Thank you.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Maria Cernot of The Barricade, a website that I highly recommend checking out. Maria has some great journalism that she posts on The Barricade, and I think it is worth keeping up with what is happening in Eastern Europe, so be sure to check out The Barricade. Link in the show notes. And, as always, let me know what you thought about this edition of Parallax Views by dropping me a line on Twitter at ViewsParallax, or by email at parallaxviewspod@protonmail.com. Producers credit shoutouts to Amelia, Mark, Martin, Brace, John, Zach, Gratz, Ted, and Mickey. If you'd like to join those listeners in getting your very own producers credit on each and every edition of Parallax Views, well, consider supporting me on Patreon.com/ParallaxViews. That's Patreon.com/ParallaxViews at the $10 or $15 tier. And if you join the $5 tier, you'll have access to the Parallax Views current events program the week that was. We just dropped a few new episodes, including a multi-parter on what I'm calling Barmageddon. Part 1 features Michael Swanson of the Wall Street Window discussing Bill Barr and his adherence to the scary unitary executive theory. So check that out at patreon.com/parallaxviews. That's patreon.com/parallaxviews. And with that being said, Until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.